Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey rockers, today's guest is singer, guitarist, producer, and songwriting extraordinaire, Butch Walker. Butch and I jump into the deep end and dissect the 1998 hit single, Freak of the Week, from one of Butch's previous bands, The Marvelous Three. Taken from their 1998 record called Hey Album, Freak of the Week rose to number 5 on the modern rock radio charts, and solidified Butch as a songwriting force to be reckoned with. From there, he cultivated a successful solo career and shot to superstardom writing songs for some of the biggest names in pop music. Butch and I talk about musical imperfections within a song and how those beautiful mistakes can really add an authentic human emotion to a track. We talk about a number of his musical influences and how each and every one of them bled into this particular song. And I recall the story to Butch, how he completely earned my respect and admiration as a songwriter when we sat down together to pen a song some years ago. For all this and much more, stick around.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
I'm in Tennessee. We pretty much spend most of our time back in the South now. I'm like 3 hours from where I grew up. So
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of nice, you know, to be back there, but I'm also in proximity. I'm right outside Nashville, which a lot of my friends live here, or much to the locals' dismay, a lot of them are moving here. So I'm part of the problem. But yeah, it's great. You know, I'm still going back and forth to California a lot because our kids in school there still, and that's tricky, you know, to make a transition.
Sure.
But it's good. And, you know, we kind of uplifted our roots out there that we had for 13 years that took me out there for work, you know, mostly years ago, and realized after I could pretty much make records anywhere. And I've got a little studio that's pretty awesome out west that I just lock up and leave it. And when I come back, I can make records there. And, you know, as long as I can afford that, I'm going to do it until I can't afford it.
Right on. Well, I'd like to give the listeners a little history here with Butch. I've been following your career since 1990. Butch played in a band out of Atlanta called South Gang, which the record was produced by Howard Benson, who, as a lot of my listeners know, ended up working with Less Than Jake on a couple records. So the history kind of runs deep here. I loved South Gang. I think the song Taint an Angel is absolutely amazing. Then the crazy thing is, South Gang breaks up, and Butch, Jace Fincher, the bass player, and Doug Mitchell, the drummer of South Gang, go on to form Floyd's Funk Revival, which morphed into just the Floyds.
Like a snow reindeer, as I stare at the clock till the pain starts to feel, and I wonder what you're doing right now.
I saw the Floyds at the Covered Dish and the Florida Theater in Gainesville.
Wow.
I didn't know you were in the band. This is pre-internet. I didn't know it was you guys.
Yeah.
I had no idea this was South Gang, now with the Floyds, which is
completely different. Yeah.
Which is a mind trip. And then from there, you, Jace, and Doug went on to form Marvelous Three. And, you know, not blowing smoke up your backside here, Butch. I have talked about you more times over the years, especially to younger bands. I've given you as the example about reinvention, okay? Mm. You just kept knocking down doors. It is so admirable, you know, from
Marvel. My back hurts so bad.
Mine too. I'm not young anymore.
No.
But you went... From Marvelous 3, of course, in 2002, you put out your first solo record, Left of Self-Centered. In 2004, mm-hmm. you put out Letters, and you've done a number of records since then. And then you got into songwriting with other people, okay? You've written for SR-71. You co-wrote their hit Right Now, Girl All the Bad Guys Want with Bowling for Soup. You've written for Taylor Swift, Avril Lavigne. And you just keep, as I said, pushing down doors. It is so awesome. So today, Butch wanted to talk about Freak of the Week, which I was living in Atlanta in Grant Park, which you had a song on your next record called Grant Park.
Amazing.
when 99X was blowing this song up. And the first time I heard it, I was like, holy hell, what is this? Because you know, late 90s, what the climate was, there wasn't much rock on the radio. And this had an alternative tinge to it. But once I found out it was you, again, pre-internet, and I heard this song a couple of times before they you know, if the radio announcer didn't announce who the hell it was, you didn't know. You'd have to wait till the next time they played it. When I found out it was you, it made sense. I'm like, Butch is a hard rock guy, and I can hear it. And
it was Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, that song, for sure. And that was by design.
No, you reinvented yourself. So take us back to this time period. You know, Marvelous 3 put out their first record in 1997, Math and Other Problems, which was followed by the Hey album in 1998. And I understand that and I didn't know this, that it was released independently on Marvelous Records. When did Elektra pick up the record?
So let me try to just get back a couple of brain cells and remember what happened was we put out that second album on under just a... Yeah, I don't even know if that was a legitimate record label. We just put a fucking name on it,
and sure.
we had distribution through some local people that had helped just kind of distribute it to mom and pop stores, because that's pretty much all we were gonna get at the time. And you know, if you go back to that era where there was this thing called a record store, you know, getting distribution was very important, because the only tangible product at the time was still a CD. And so that's all we had to get our music out there, because we certainly weren't on the radio, and we had shopped ourselves to the, you know, major label world in search of that last holy grail, you know, major label record deal. But went back when the arms of your career rest in theirs, and you know, it's not it's not that way anymore, which is awesome. But for new people coming up, I'm very excited how it works now. But back then, we were ignored by everybody, because we knew it, because we kind of joked. We were like, we're a band that formed with an image and style and sound that was maybe five years too early, but 15 years too late. And so that was our kind of our motto, and we just stuck with it and said maybe we're just a little ahead, you know. every time we got shut down because we didn't sound like whatever band at the time, you know, we didn't sound exactly like all the other number bands, and we didn't sound like a textbook punk pop band, and we didn't sound like a metal band, and yeah. All those were big in the late 90s or emerging, at least, you know. And then mm-hmm. and then you know, rap metal and things like that. We were more of a just kind of a snarky, you know, I don't want to use the word punk loosely, because we definitely were more punk in our image, because at the time there wasn't a lot of bands wearing skinny black jeans and ties and eyeliner. And I remember labels, you know, who thought they knew everything were just like going, you know, why are you guys dressed like the Knack? You know? And It's like,
because it's cool.
That's because the Knack was fucking cool, bro. And also, and also, like, let's take a chance on something that's not really being, you know, done or whatever. And I'm not saying we certainly didn't invent this. There was a lot of bands bubbling on the underground that, and a lot of punk bands too that were kind of adopting that sense of style and putting some of that rigid, almost new wave element into the guitar playing and the music. And we were like obsessed. We were obsessed with the Cars. And I mean, we were obsessed with everything. We were all three just walking music encyclopedias. And so yeah. That's why over the years there was all these different reinventions, because whatever we would all get into listening to, and I completely promise I will answer your question. But I have not begun to do this yet, but, you know, the thing is we would, you know, we would all get on Kicks and go like, oh man, this is all like the early, late 70s, early 80s New York scene, which we were really into on the first Marvelous 3 record, which is why we kind of, we were stealing, you know, moves from all kinds of groups at that time. I remember when this will eventually answer the question about the song and when it came out, is when we put that second record out, I had played it for Jace, who's still my best friend to this day, the bass player, and I played him the record, because it was just the demos, obviously, because he had not heard them, he had not played on them yet. I just did the demos in my bedroom, and I played him Freak of the Week, and I remember I totally slogged it off. I was just like, oh yeah, and then this is like a kind of a fucking throwaway novelty, like attempt at a hit song. and I didn't care at the time. We didn't want to do that. We just wanted to, we wanted to be successful on our own terms and whatever. I mean, but the irony and the hypocrisy is we all want to be big, right? So it's like, at the same time, we would hope we were able to like get through, but I didn't think it would be that song. I thought it was whatever. I was probably just being a little too snobby with myself at the time and thinking that I had so much better songs written than this, you know?
Yeah.
But like Jace was like, he was the barometer, because he was not a music critic. He was a music lover, and he listened and he goes, that's the one, that's the song. And I was like, really? That this song, the song about coming to terms with selling out, you know, because.
And he's not going to bullcrap you. He's your best friend.
Right. And so the irony was, you know, here we were getting ready to push this song about coming to terms with selling out that I had written, hopefully not about me, but, right. but it turned out to be. And it's only because, you know, that was Jace. He put that in my head that maybe that song had some juice or something. And so the next move was to go into 99X, which was the alternative radio station that was just one of the top stations in the country at this time. And Leslie Fram, the program director, who was just blowing up as like, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, the tastemaker at the time.
Listeners, this was 99X out of Atlanta.
That's right, out of Atlanta, and they were playing everything that was playing the big festivals, and they were putting on all the big festivals, and if your band was getting played in heavy rotation on that station, you were probably thriving at that moment, or about to, and all the other stations around the country would like follow suit if they started playing your song, sort of the same way they did with K-Rock. Yeah, that's right, we were the K-Rock of the South, and so there was a local DJ there named Steve, and Steve was incredible. He had a locals show called Locals Only on Sunday nights. And, you know, nobody tuned into that shit except for musicians hoping to hear their song on the radio, because no one was listening to the radio on Sunday night, you know? Yeah. And so they, you know, sadly, that's where they would play all the local stuff. And, you know, if you're lucky, you'd get your one spin a week, you know, on there. But hard as hell to break out of that and into like into mainstream radio play, especially when it's all local unsigned bands, right?
Yeah.
So Steve heard it. I went over to his desk. He was at his cubicle, and I played him the little CDR, you know, that I had made. And he heard the first song, and he was skipping around, and then he got to like the third, or I buried Freak of the Week on it, you know, and he heard that, and he listened to, literally, it only takes 20 seconds to get to the chorus of that song.
We're going to get there. Yes. I'm glad you pointed that out.
And so, so, you know, he listened, and when it got to the chorus, after the chorus, he shut it off, and he just looked at me and he goes, follow me. And he got up, and I was like, what the fuck is he doing? He got up and he walked into Leslie's office while she was in the middle of a meeting with the doors closed. And Steve goes, you have to hear this. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Is he going to lose his job? Is she going to be, you know, get the fuck out of my office? And no, she stopped the meeting and goes, hey, yes, I've heard of you. You know, I play a lot of your friends' bands, because a lot of our friends that were in bands that were already starting to kind of take off and were already on the radio and stuff. And so we were pretty left out in the cold and feeling pretty bad about ourselves by this point, and not like able to, we just felt like maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe we should just, like, you know, make a textbook record of whatever is, you know, fashionable at the time. But we didn't want to do that. So we took that CDR in, and she put on the first few songs again, just like he did, kind of skipped through them after like 30 seconds. She's like, that's good. You know, she was like, nice. And then she got to Freak of the Week, same exact thing. She got, after the chorus, she turned it down and goes, that song's a hit. She's like, do you mind if I start playing it? And I was like, oh my God, please don't fuck with my emotions right now. I was like, please be telling the truth, because this is going to destroy me if you don't. Because that was just like it was sort of like, you know, I don't know, it's not like winning the lottery, but it is for a musician, for a young guy who's been slugging it out on the road 200 days a year, his whole life. And like, this is finally a shot. That at the time, that was the only time you had a shot, was getting
well,
on the
radio.
Well,
you can't put enough emphasis on 99X. They were the K-Rock of the South.
And, they were.
And, you know, they were so influential. What, you know, other playlists would look at what they were playing. And I love this story, because I have said so many times on this show and outside of this show, and I know you think the same thing, Butch. I know that you have songs that you've produced or written and that just, for whatever reason, didn't become a hit at radio, but you know in your heart that they were a hit, you know. And in my opinion, this should have been the if not one of the biggest songs in 1999. This song is awesome. I loved it from the first time I heard it. And it's so great of you to tell the story of how, and there's, it's such a running theme on this podcast of, yeah, this was just another song. I kind of buried it. It was kind of a joke, you know,
yeah.
And that became the one. It's the one you didn't think of.
No, and that was just it. It was every record company, including Elektra, turned us down up to that day. And then she started playing it and phones went crazy for it, requests. And then every station started adding it across the board. And then it just started climbing very fast up to like top five eventually. And then so every single label the very next week, she told me, Leslie was like, she's like, don't sign anything yet. And I thought that was pretty cool and cocky of her to say that, because she was like, those record companies are all going to like eat crow and come back after you now.
That's,
and of
so
course, and then there was a bidding war.
Right.
For us, including one of the labels that turned us down.
That's so awesome. Now, was the track she was playing, Freak of the Week, was that the same one that Elektra picked up? Meaning, was there, when Elektra got a hold of the record, a lot of times they want to do a remix, so they want to add parts. Was it the same thing?
This was the aspiring producer in me, where I was not happy with this being out there on the radio, because everyone else was like, no, it's great. It's the one getting played all over the radio. And it was literally my rough mix that I had done on a 16 track, you know, recording set up in my bedroom.
Uh-huh.
Like the drums were on two tracks, you know, just like there was no, you couldn't even mix. If you sent this to a mixer to mix, they couldn't even do anything, because I had grouped everything down to two tracks each.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't have enough tracks. I only had 16 tracks. And so I was like, okay, the drums are all on two tracks. So if they wanted to like bring up the snare drum or bring up the kick drum or EQ it,
you can't
do it. Tough shit. So
poor man's multi-track.
Yeah. And I didn't know anything about recording or mixing at the time. I wanted to be a producer engineer, and I was getting better at it. Obviously this was listenable, what they were playing on the radio. And by the time it got on the radio with all the radio compression, it actually sounded almost as good as anything done by, you know, slick producers and engineers and mixers, is what people said. But I was very much under the guise of, it needs to be recorded right, you know. So
okay.
But I didn't want to lose the whatever magic they heard. So, you know, what we did is we went up to Bearsville, New York, where we still needed to finish the record.
Now, was this with the producer Jim Ebert, who co-produced the record with you?
Yes. So he did not produce that song. I had done that myself. But
okay.
Jim and I got together to go to Bearsville to finish the record. So what we did is we took my tracks and we built around them and re-recorded the drums properly and did all that to it. And, you know, this is all obviously textbook anti-punk rock move, is to like re-record your shit and you know, take the grit out of it, so to speak. Everybody thinks that's what happens, right?
Well, it sounds like you kept the integrity of the song, though. You kept the parts you needed.
It's absolutely the same recording. It was just literally redoing the drums on that one so that we could have it properly mixed by a guy, you know, probably a three-name guy who was, like, doing all the radio mixing at the time, you know. So we ended up giving it to Tom Lord Algie, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
To mix it. And it was really funny because that was a time when, unfortunately, someone who was just mixing your record, who had zero, you know, skin in the game on your record at all. They were not there for the blood and sweat and the tears, but they're there to either completely elevate it with their mixing skills or destroy it. And and so he sent it back while the song was on the radio and blowing up. He sent the mix back that we were going to service to radio and like replace the other version with just because it just sounded bigger and a little spankier. But he took out the intro, which was the little like lo-fi kind of
little sample drums,
the drum loop thing, which was very, very much the signature to the song. So when you heard it come on, when that would come on at shows, people knew what they were getting and they would go fucking mental when they heard the
yeah, for sure.
He took it out and like didn't even use it in the mix. And I remember I called him, and this is when mixers were so cocky and getting overpaid. Like you,
and who the
believe,
hell are you, kid?
And yeah. getting percentage points for mixing your record, something you created. You know, that's one step above like giving the mastering guy a point, which was, everybody was just trying to get a fucking percentage point on a record when records were selling.
Yeah.
And so he sent it back like that, and we all listened to it and we're like, well, you left out like one of the key points of the you know, the identity of the song from the get-go.
The heartbeat of the song.
And I remember he just said, what are you going to do? That's what he said to me. And I was like, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you to put it fucking back in is what I'm going to tell you to do. Yeah. And if you don't, I'll send it to somebody else, which I'm sure you're not used to that ever happening to you, but I will. And sure enough, like, it got put back in and the mix sounded great. He did a great job on it. But at the same time, there was like half the stations never switched the versions. They played the old version that was done in my bedroom DIY on my little 16-track recorder. And
that's interesting. And when you went to Bearsville, I'm assuming that for this time period, it's right on the cusp of Pro Tools. Was it all to tape, or did you dump everything to Pro Tools when you went with Jim?
No, interestingly, and this is a cool part of the story, is I'd never had money. I'd always been just the textbook broke musician, you know, struggling, getting by with $100 gig here and there. And when I'd record local bands on like my little 8-track and 16-track setup, you know, I would get like $200 a day. And I was still doing that up to that point. I was still having to do that for just to pay, you know, for, you know, groceries and whatever, you know, cause I was literally just house sitting in somebody's guest house, which is where I was crashing. And I had a little setup in the corner. And it was, I'm trying to remember what was the setup. It was probably like ADAT. You remember those?
Oh, of course.
So
yeah.
It was like these VHS tapes, you know, that you used as your recording format, and you put them in the thing like a VCR, and you could record up to 8 tracks on it. You could link.
They have to chase each other, and they get stuck.
Yeah, and you could link two machines or more together. Yeah. So I had two of those machines because they were cheaper at the time than tape, and it was way cheaper to buy the tapes to record on than it was analog reel to reel. And I grew up, and I'd made records on analog my whole life, you know, on some form of reel to reel. And so when I had that, that was cool, but it still didn't sound great. I had like a really funky, crappy board, you know, just very, I think I had like a 12-channel board and one compressor and like a couple of microphones, and that's all I had. And so this was kind of cool. My girl, this was over 20 years ago, but I was like talking to the local records, the local music store, who had just gotten in a used Pro Tools rig, and it was a new thing, you know, still at the time, but it was progressing fastly, and a lot of people were making their records on it, and I knew this, and I was like, God, one of these days I'm going to have to see if I can ever afford a computer and learn this computer recording, because I can see that, I can see this is going to be the wave of the future. There was a lot of records starting to get played on the radio that were made strictly in computers that sounded like they were made sort of on tape, you know? And it was just improving and getting better, and the quality and the track count and all these things was just progressing quickly. That's why there was a used system at this music store, because somebody had upgraded already to the next version.
Yeah.
And it was this R&B group from Atlanta called Silk that brought their old system in.
Let me pick you up.
A 16-track version of Pro Tools. That was it. No more tracks than that. Very limited interface, very limited everything.
It's probably version one.
I think it probably had a one, God, what was the hard drive? Like a 500 megabyte.
Yeah.
Hard drive. It was like rack mounted in like three rack spaces. And the computer was ancient, like one of the first Macs, you know, that you could actually record with. But at the time, they wanted like $4,000 for it. And I was like, I've never had $4,000 in my life. And so it was awesome because, my girl she put it on layaway and I didn't know it. And then ended up buying it for me with her bartending money.
That's awesome.
I was like, I don't want to take this, you know? And she was like, well, that's tough shit, you know? And, I was like, I promise I'll pay you back one day.
it sounds like that was the core, one of the courses that put you where you're at now. It absolutely
set
you on that course.
It did. It set the course because I immediately dove in headfirst and started learning how to operate a Mac or a computer at all, and then how to record into it, and then all trial and error. And I would stay up Brian Wilson style in a robe and like underwear, you know, like Ron Burgundy, you know, just like sitting at the console with growing a beard and like till 6 in the morning when the sun coming up, falling asleep on the mouse. And then next thing you know, like I had that Marvelous 3 record that was the first thing I had done on a computer, and that was the first time I did, that's when I did Freak of the Week.
Because, that's awesome, man.
And so, it was all that chain of events, and that was just like, that was the start of it. And I'm just so, I love telling that story just because of how awesome it was to have her take a leap of faith when nobody else believed in me at that time, you know?
No, and there's a good chance you might have missed the boat on getting educated to record and learning computers. I mean, you were on the forefront of this, and you had to be back then. Because it was so new. I knew so many people. I had an engineer one time say to me, he called it slow tools.
Oh, like, that's we all never, called it that.
That's yeah. never going to take. I mean, hell, it took sometimes some of those old Macs would take a half hour just to boot up. But we're going to jump into the song right now. Freak of the Week is 3 minutes and 20 seconds long, right in that pop wheelhouse for a length of a song. It starts with the 3 second drum loop sample before the band kicks in. The sample then sits underneath the band. It's still there while the band in. There's these killer just stereo guitars doing these eighth notes panned off while this arpeggiated guitar part is following the bass. It's kind of this hypnotic sounding little riff. I love it. At 11 seconds, and this moves quick as bitch. Sorry, I said bitch. Edit, Chris, edit.
Oh, don't. No, don't edit that.
I did not mean to call you that. I love you, Butch. At 11 seconds, as Butch said, this song. Sometimes I talk too fast. I should have been an auctioneer. This song moves quick, as he mentioned a little bit before. At 11 seconds, we're already in the first verse. And I want to read these lyrics out, and I want you to set them up for us. I spend a lot on all the clothes that I got, because all the geeks that I meet, they all look cooler than me. What to do when they're all looking at you, because you're the freak of the week. Cause you're on the TV. What are you saying there?
That was just like at the time, you know, I was seeing a lot of and I don't mean this in a bad way at all. Maybe I do. Maybe because I probably did then, but I wouldn't now. You know, when I was full of piss and vinegar and just a snarky asshole, you know, 20 something, and I was, and I came from, you know, mostly rock that had an image and was like, you know, had something kind of flash or whatever. And just also growing up in that rock world, I noticed all of a sudden there started to be like this like professionally groomed and styled, you know, band that clearly didn't probably have any style, but had a good song. And then they went through the puppy mill of getting signed to a major label. They immediately throw them with a stylist and they dress them up in all these clothes that look really uncomfortable. By the way, I'm imitating this because after Marvelous 3 got signed, we had some awful looks. And it was all due to influence of like, you know, oh, wear this. This is very hot right now. And so...
Do you still have your red leather jacket?
I wish. It burned in the fire the first time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
I know.
I loved that jacket. You wore that at Music Midtown when I saw you guys. That's awesome.
Good jacket. but yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of like I'd see these bands and I could tell that like they were probably just like, you know, art school students or you know, or just like, you know, frat guys or whatever. And all of a sudden they're, you know, all of a sudden they're getting dressed up in like lots of shiny shirts and leather and stuff. And I'm like, God, they don't look very comfortable in that. It doesn't seem like legit.
Yeah.
And like I said, at the risk of me sounding like a hypocrite, I've had many faulty looks. But at the time, I thought my shit didn't stink at the time, although it did. And so that song was written as like a piss take on that whole scene, because this was the whole process of textbook sellout, you know, right? Like like the band leaves the nest when they're playing to their fans in like Crocs and shorts, and then all of a sudden they're on the video and they're wearing like, you know, Gucci and Prada and stuff like that, and you're like, oh, what happened?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So like I said, I'm guilty as charged.
Right. And it's kind of like these were just kind of fun lyrics and you were being a little
super
snarky.
Super fun, snarky.
Yeah, I get it. On the second and fourth lines of the song, there's a harmony on each of those lines, but it's a really subtle harmony. It's not really stuck out. It's just, it's very back there, but it just adds something.
I spend a lot on all the clothes that I got, because all the geeks that I meet, they all look cooler than me. But what to do when they're all looking at you, because you're the freak of the week, because you're on the team.
And then at the 25-second mark, man, you're already at the chorus. And it just explodes. There's percussion that comes in here. It's almost panned kind of the right. It's like you got tambourine and some shakers. It just gets really big. And the lyric is, can you make me a promise? Stop it before we begin. Will you hold onto my head if I ever lose it again? And there's harmonies on the first three lines. The last line is just you alone. Set up these lyrics. You're being snarky at the verse and where are you taking us here?
Well, I guess it just depends on who you're like, who that chorus is asking that of, you know, whether it's you praying to some God or asking your girlfriend at the time, please make me a promise, you know, let's stop this before it begins. You know, don't let my head get out of the game or get too big for my britches. That's what that, you know, next line means. Hold on to my head if I ever lose it again. And so it, like I said, it's just this, it's this inner battle, inner struggle with said artist who's putting their shit out there and they're about to lose the plot.
You know? I love that lyric. Will you hold on to my head if I ever lose it again? It's awesome. And right after the word begin on the second chorus lyric, stop it before we begin, Jace does this really cool descending bass line. It's super simple, but it's just perfect.
Stop it before we begin.
tasteful. I love the playing. I love what's going on here. I'm assuming Jace played on the record.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, everybody okay. did. Yes,
love yeah, because I've seen him live. He's a ripper. So
bass player.
He's awesome. He's awesome. But just yeah. It just gives me the goosebumps when that bass line came in there. It's just so cool. At the end of the chorus, there's the total. I in my notes here, I wrote the total rock moving guitar parts. Da na 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 na. And then on the double snare, there's a clap clap. Yeah,
always gotta have claps.
Was that something you wanted there, or something Jim came up with, or this was all you?
I don't remember if Jim did too, but we were, this was the record was let's make the Cars and the Ramones and let's combine all of these elements, let's get the, so hand claps were a commonality in all of that, back in the day.
Yeah, the knack, as you said, yeah.
Absolutely, like My Sharona, people just respond to them. And it's a people mimic it live and it's fun. And it also just makes a snare sound badass.
It does. And it's just, it only happens once in this song but man, it's just so, it's such a hook, and it's those little things that all add up to a hit song and you wonder why it's a hit, and regardless of what it did on the charts, that little added those two claps are just perfect.
That's awesome.
We get into the reintro. It's the same length as the top of the song, but that arpeggiated guitar picking part comes in, that what I was saying, the hypnotic haunting part, but I notice it's louder here in the mix. I'm assuming that was intentional.
Absolutely.
At least it sounds louder than the first part of the song.
Yeah, it does and is for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe that's when it became doubled, maybe by a second guitar.
Quite possibly, and maybe that's why it sounds fuller. And
I can't remember. The riff was inspired by a lot of people think it's the Birds because I mimic the So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star melody cadence.
Then it's time to go downtown, where the aged man won't let you down. Sell your soul to the company who are waiting there to sell plastic wear.
Which might have been subconsciously in my mind, but I was actually I was ripping off Mayor of Simpleton by XTC, which I loved.
Yeah.
And that one had that same sort of descending bass thing going.
Yes.
And the guitar was sort of doing some sort of arpeggiated thing on that. And I shamelessly bit that as hard as I could chew, but without plagiarizing it, because believe me,
yeah,
it does not get far past the due diligence process at a label if there's something like that happening. So
I love how the bass and the guitar are chasing each other in that part. It's so cool.
And it's cool when you can like sit there and make something like that happen when you're coming up with it and you're like, oh god, this is so fun, I could do this all day. Well, listen how they're counterpointing each other, and so yeah. That just stuck, and then it just so happened to be that guitar thing became. I had to pick and choose my battles as a three piece, whether to do the chunk, the kung 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 kung, or the boom doo 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 doo. So that's two different guitar parts recorded. So I would just play a combination of both. I would chunk it and arpeggiate it with a chorus pedal on it and make it kind of sound kind of chorally and like dreamy sounding, but at the same time keeping the chunky thing going live.
That's awesome. Well, we get into the second verse, and there's a rhyme scheme difference here from verse one that I want to talk about that's really interesting. I'm going to read the lyric, and I'll talk about that. I've got a shrink. I swear he's Elvis, I think. He wears the coolest suede shoes when I come in with the blues. He thinks it's all about, and everywhere on Google it says all about culture and art, but I swear you get an R in there, O-U-R, like yours and mine. He thinks it's all about our culture and art. Is that what you say there?
Got a shrink, I swear he's Elvis, I think. He wears the coolest suede shoes when I come in with the blues. He thinks it's all about culture and art, but the truth of it is that it rips me apart.
No, it's all about he thinks it's all about culture and art.
Okay.
I might have just like thrown a little extra syllable at you for
then. Okay, well, yeah. then we'll go with that. Then he thinks it's all about culture and art, but the truth of it is that it rips me apart. So on the first verse, on the second line, because all the geeks that I meet, they all look cooler than me. And the last line, because you're the freak of the week, because you're on the TV, me and TV. Well, here in the second verse, the last line should have. If it was mimicked after the first verse, should have rhymed with blues in the second line, but you don't do it there. You say he thinks it's all about culture and art, but the truth of it is that it rips me apart. Was that just what the lyric was? Did you ever think? And I find myself doing this when I write songs. I go, well, the first verse on the fourth line, it rhymed with the second line. I got to do it in the second verse.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sometimes I do change it up for the second verse, but I can't remember if I did that intentionally or not. I was going for those, what they, I guess, call inner rhyme schemes. On the second, you know, where you take, you know, one line and it has, you know, shrink and think and blues and shoes and, you know, that kind of thing.
And it's brilliant because I hate that about myself as I've gotten older. And I'm sure there's things about yourself where you go, man, I wish I was still naive in a sense where I overthink things as a songwriter. I go, it was like this the first verse. It's got to be like, no, if it makes you feel good on the second verse, it can be the way that it is.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why I did that at the time. It might have just been, you know, like I said, there could have been a song that did it that I loved, and it was just subconsciously in my brain that way to put it there.
And again, on the second line and the fourth line of verse two, there's those subtle harmonies that are there that just adds that little
octaves,
little extra.
Yeah.
Yeah, those octaves are really cool. What are you saying here? You know, I've got a shrink. I swear he's Elvis, I think. Set up this verse now for us.
It's again, this is the subject having to come to terms with their selling out and how it's affecting their friendships back home and their relationships and what people being really concerned with what people think of them, especially their OG fans and their OG. It literally is the piss take of punk rock and how like you really no man, I don't want that one guy at the record store to get mad at me, you know.
And, which is interesting, though, because I guess you're taking an outside look at the other bands, because at this point yourself, self-admitted, you didn't have a pot to piss in.
No.
I mean, so it wasn't about you selling out. It was about what you were observing.
It was me observing it and then wondering if that would ever happen. And that's why
that's cool.
You know, getting together with a shrink to discuss all this, and even he has cool shoes, you know, and I'm like, it's making me doubt his integrity, you know.
That is awesome,
it's
man.
It's ridiculous.
That I had no idea. That's why I love doing this show. You learn things like that, because I've sung this lyric so many times over the years and had no idea that's what you were getting after.
Oh, that's fun. That's awesome.
We're already at 1 minute and five. I say already. We're at 1 minute and 5 seconds. Usually, in a lot of songs, you don't get to the first chorus. We're already at the second chorus now. It's the same as the first chorus. I'm going to read the lyric again. Can you make me a promise? Stop it before we begin. Will you hold on to my head? And there's harmonies, nice high harmonies on all three of those. The last line's just you, if I ever lose it again. And there's moving rock chords there. Da-da-na-na-na. And then I call it the killer breakdown part. And I wrote, it's the jung-jung part that comes in there, and it's just heavy.
Had to have a minimum of 4 junk junks at the time on the radio.
It's awesome. It is so rock. And I remember when I found out this song was you, I'm like, yes, because I could feel the spirit of the 80s. This part reminds me, not even so much 80s, more 70s. Like I hear the Sweet. I don't know if you remember Stars.
Dude, Stars and Sweet. All those,
dude,
those were
Stars
huge.
And
the
even
Raspberries,
Edgar Winter
all those
Group.
Bands. Oh, yeah. Those bands were all big for us. Those were big bands for us. We loved
and,
them.
And the third time of the jung-jung, the guitar harmony comes in. And then when the band is in, it's the octave. Ding, 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 ding. And I'm also hearing now, as I hark back, it almost sounds a little Floyd's Funk Revival in there. You're getting a little of that 70s.
Yeah, all of a sudden a funky element comes in.
Yeah, but that part is so good. It's so good.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then the band ramps up to this like crescendo, and then the whole bottom drops out.
Of course.
And it's just the guitar, single guitar, and a quiet vocal that's kind of just kind of swirling and moving around. And I don't know if you did this intentionally or if you even know what the hell I'm talking about, Butch, but here at the bridge, the Tell Me I Sold Out, Tell Me I Sold Out, Go Ahead, that lyric happens twice. And as that's happening, at that starts at the 122nd mark, around 146 in the song, there's a guitar flub on those mutes.
Tell me I sold out. Tell me I sold out. Go ahead. Tell me I sold out. Tell me I sold out. Go ahead.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but it doesn't surprise me because I didn't really... I'm not a big fan of retakes, you know. I like to.
It is a beautiful mistake, but that's something that you probably maybe now that you would go, oh, that has to be fixed. It's an
no.
Obvious...
I would rather not fix it.
Good. That's good to hear. Okay.
Yeah. I mean that to me, that I grew up listening to records on headphones because, you know, if they were loud in the house, you know, you might get yelled at. So I would listen to all the little weird imperfections on like Aerosmith records and
yeah.
Queen records even. I mean, everybody thinks that band is so perfectly aligned and like overproduced. And it's like, there's not a lot going on those records. It's vocals that are like, the vocals are like the symphony, but the band underneath is a three piece.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they're making all kinds of weird fucking noises and flubs and stuff. And if you get the solo tracks on YouTube now and listen to some of those, you're like, oh man, there's bad notes all over the place. And it's like, but that's I don't know, that's the character and what keeps it interesting to listen to, you know.
Just the fact that you left that in there, you just said the word character, you took the words out of my mouth, it adds this realness, this authenticity to it. This song doesn't sound fake and corporate and produced. There's something real here, and I love that. I noticed that, that's and awesome. I kept going back to it, and I'm like, wait a second. It is a guitar flub. It's not perfect, but it is perfect for the song. It's perfect. we then get into basically after the Tell Me I Sold Out, Go Ahead. The mood changes musically. It's the same vocal melody, but the guitar is panned off to the right, playing this kind of staccato pattern, while the other guitar is panned right, playing like an arpeggiated part. There's no harmonies here, but you come back and sing the first verse again. Underneath it, the Tell Me I Sold Out, Tell Me I Sold Out, Go Ahead is going. And now the first verse comes back. And I spent a lot on all the clothes that I got because all the geeks that I meet, they all look cooler than me. And right there, though, you do this na-na thing.
I spent a lot on all the clothes that I got because all the geeks that I meet, they all look cooler than me.
No. Yeah. my worst Michael Jackson imitation, probably.
Were you just kind of, as we call, scatting on the mic and it's something
always,
you left in?
Always. I mean, I did that all the time anyway. Like, you know, that would just like, you know, like that. And it is a Michael Jackson and a Prince thing and all that. But like,
I watched a bunch of live videos you're talking about. There's things in this song that the audience reacts to and everyone does the na-na with the fist in the air.
Yeah, they do.
it's so, I got goosebumps watching it last night. I'm like, that is so cool.
That's fun.
For what to do when they're all looking at you because you're the freak of the week. And then the last line kind of fades in the mix because you're on the TV because basically the other vocal that was underneath it, the Tell Me I Sold, and you hold the note out real high.
Yeah, yeah.
It's now in unison
with
as the chorus comes back in for the quadruple chorus at the end of the song.
Yeah. Nice. Well, you remember the Manfred Mann song that they covered, the Bruce Springsteen song, Blinded by the Light?
Of course, yeah.
It's a pretty rockin' version, and it's a pretty great recording. And the way that they do the vocal round at the end was probably an influence in my younger years on this song. Because, you know, they go into the Blinded by the Light, wrapped up like a deuce, another runner, and they keep that going. Then the do on the phone on the ceiling, kind of.
Yeah.
So he goes back to the first verse and puts it underneath, And I'm like, oh, that's good. Good.
That is
the
so
old,
cool. That's
the old
so cool.
Vocal round. I could back this in modern music, and so I did it a lot, you know, to songs where the last chorus I would like make a vocal round out of it, which I do on Freak of the Week as well. So
that is so cool that you referenced that. That is I totally hear that now, and I never would have thought that unless you said something. Thank you for sharing that. The I'm calling it the quadruple chorus. So a double chorus comes in. It's the same as the first two choruses. I'll read the lyric one time for the last time. Can you make me a promise? Stop it before we begin. Will you hold on to my head if I ever lose it again? And after the second time, then the chord progression changes back to the bridge progression. But the chorus still goes another two times. You're singing the chorus lyric over the bridge progression. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's where that vocal round thing just came back and was like, this makes perfect sense, you know, especially instead of the broken down version of the chords in the bridge. At the outro, we did the bridge, but we just kept the beat going just like the chorus. So it's doing the, you know, you know, and so it's going through those chords. Tell me a soul out. Tell me a soul out. Going. So we brought that back, but ramped up, and then this was my first time using, like I said, a computer to record records and using Pro Tools. So I was fascinated with this ability to
copy and paste parts.
Yeah, I'd never been able to do that. So I took the tell me I sold out, go ahead from the bridge and put it underneath at the end while it's going, you know, can you make me a promise? And that actually might have been even what we call flown.
Yeah.
Copy and pasted on the end. I might have just been making that chorus just out of spending too much time in front of the computer one night and going like, oh my God, you can do this? And then there you have it, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, the chorus of this song is the hook, but you get two choruses in this song. That bridge is kind of a chorus. Tell me I sold out.
That's the hook most people remember from the song whenever they go, what song is that? And then I'll go like, oh, you know, tell me I sold out. And I go, oh yeah, that one.
Well, and it's interesting too, because the only time the song's called Freak of the Week is the fourth line in the first verse. It's not in the refrain of the song. It's not the big chorus hook that you hear.
By design, that was like, oh, I don't like it when like a song is the chorus is the title, you know. It's like, so full of my fucking self at the time.
No, I think it's awesome. The third time that the chorus comes around, and now the vocals too, they're in stereo at the end here. They go stereo. They're panned hard, each of them. It's so cool. The third time, the chorus comes back in with the "Tell Me You Sold Out" lyric, continuing underneath now, basically till the song fades out. And I had one last thing in the notes here I had to say is there is some just killer bass runs and note choices here at the fade out. Jace did some really cool stuff.
I'm telling you, that was the best thing about us going through our funky phase in the 90s, where like we were like obsessed with like funk rock bands from the 70s, like Mother's Finest and of course like the Allman Brothers and you name it. It was like, but we were not trying to make a Southern rock record, you know. We were somehow going to take all of that and put it into Tom Peterson's bass and make it sound like Cheap Trick, you know, which I completely failed to mention that was one of our big, that was an architect for that band, for the Marvelous Three, was Cheap Trick.
Sure.
By and large.
I can totally hear that. Well, yeah. This song, I've loved it to the first time I heard it, and just getting to just really absorb myself the last 2 days in it. I cranked it up. I went grocery shopping last night and I just put it in my car. I floored it, the volume to like 11, and I'm just singing it with the windows down. And I just, I'm serious, man. Like I love this tune. And one last thing, but before I let you go, I have to say something else. And again, I not blowing smoke. I've told a lot of people about a lot of younger bands, you know, how do you make it? How do you do this and do that? And being able to constantly pivot and reinvent and change with the times. And, you know, you're the first person I ever co-wrote a song with. Well, started to co-write a song. Les and Jake was doing the In With The Out Crowd record. We were at one of those studios out in Burbank somewhere. I don't know. And you had come down. My manager said, you know, would you want to write with Butch Walker? I'm like, are you kidding? And you walked in that day and I was shaking. I was like a kid in a candy store. And you came in. And I had this song called Don't Fall Asleep on the Subway, and I had played it for you. And one of the things I'll never forget was you looked at me at the end, and you just said to me, you said, and most guys would never do this. Most guys would want to try to get some money out of something. And you just looked at me and you go, well, what do you want me to do with this? This is a great song. And I've never respected somebody in the business more than that. I'll never forget that. We ended up not doing a co-write together. We spent an hour on that and you had to be somewhere else. And that was kind of the end of it. That was my first co-writing experience, was you telling me, no, this song is what it is. What do you want me to do to it? And yeah. I'm sitting there slack-jawed going, well, you're supposed to make it better. But I want to thank you for being that humble and that frickin' cool, man.
Oh, well, sometimes, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people don't understand that. I mean, I did that on the last Green Day record where they came in with, you know, I don't care if people think that I had a lot to do with it or not. Like when they brought me the demo, so to speak, and they brought me the demo to the song Father of All, which was Father of All Motherfuckers, you know, that record. They brought me the recording of it, and it was done. I was like, this is great. And I was like, we can't re-record the track. I mean, we can add a couple of things and maybe fine tune it a little bit, but we can't re-record this. And they all three were like, oh God, I'm so glad you said that. You know, cause they were like, we really love this version. And I'm like, it's got so much fire. It's crazy. I'm not going to fuck this up for you. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to like take this and like just to, for vanity's sake, say, oh, I had to completely fix that song and re-record it. You know, that's what A&R guys do. I don't need to do that. You know,
not a lot of guys in this business have that humility and that restraint, and that's refreshing. But man, I want to thank you so much for sitting in. I know you got a busy day ahead. And if there's anything you'd like to leave the listeners right now with, Butch Walker solo, maybe a Marvelous 3 reunion. We could play a show with Les than Jake. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge.
That'd be really fun. We've been talking a lot about trying to maybe get back together to play some shows. And just getting my barn and jam, you know.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Well, good deal, man. Well, hey, thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
You too, my man. Thanks.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Everyone Lies from Hampshire, England. The band consists of Adam on vocals and guitar, Ben on guitar and vocals, Stokesy on bass and vocals, and Lockie on the drums. You can find them on Instagram at Everyone Lies Band. Here's a snippet of their song, Biscuits.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Well, that was easily one of my favorite episodes ever, and I think that Butch is the perfect example of someone with a healthy obsession with all types of music, which then obviously spills right over into his songwriting.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that just eat, breathes, and sleeps music. He was probably that kid that was in his headphones falling asleep in his 10th grade science class, you know, yeah. Nodding off to the teacher. You know, he even talked about when he got that first Pro Tools where he'd, you know, fall asleep at 6 a.m. holding the mouse. He's just, he has a healthy obsession, and it bleeds into his songwriting.
And I think it's cool that he's played so many different styles of music, but not in a following the trends kind of way. He just seems like a guy that just is interested in so many styles of music. Because honestly, man, you could write a song and play it in different styles. And if you are a fan of so many different types of music, which came across even in you talking about this one song and you talking about Freak of the Week, there were so many different styles of music incorporated into the writing of this song that, yeah, I could see how he could be in a hair metal-ish type band, then a funk band, then Marvelous Three.
Yeah, I mean, he took off for L.A. when he was 18 years old. The band was called Bite the Bullet. They changed the name to South Gang. They got a record deal. You know, he was the ripe old age of 18. When he formed Marvelous Three, he was in his late 20s, which is crazy. You know, that to me is so young now. You know, he still had a whole lifetime ahead of him as a career, and Marvelous Three was basically his third band at that point, you know, from South Gang to Floyd's Funk Revival. Then they shortened the name to the Floyds, and then formulating Marvelous Three, and then of course going on to having a successful solo career, and then being a songwriter to the stars.
Hey, something I thought was really cool and should be kind of inspiring to anyone in a local band out there. And hey, local band is not a derogatory term. Less Than Jake is a local band in Gainesville. Everybody's a local band where you're from. But something I found inspiring was Butch talked about, and I assume that all cities have this. In Pittsburgh, we have a radio station. It's the rock station called The X. And on Sunday nights, they have a program called Edge of the X where they play local music. And you can hear your band on the radio for the first time. And Chris, I'm sure you've experienced that. I don't know what your station was in Florida.
Well, yeah, but our station was the campus station at the University of Florida called Rock 104, and it was called Locals Only. And I think it was on Sunday night, as Butch said, when, you know, here, we'll give the locals their, you know, when no one's listening to the radio, just the musicians right. And maybe a few of their girlfriends would tune in. But I was delivering pizzas in Gainesville, Florida for Gumby's Pizza, and I was out on a pizza run, listen to the Locals Only, and they played Liquor Store, and I about damn ran my truck off the road. You know, it was just like, my gosh, it was the craziest thing to hear your own band on the radio.
Right. It's always an exciting thing. Granted, 99X in Atlanta is one of the biggest rock stations, probably along the lines of K-Rock. I think you referred to it as K-Rock of the South when we talked earlier about this, but it's pretty cool that basically it was a big break for their band to get played on that local Sunday night show.
Well, it was, and not to take anything away from Butch's hard work. I mean, he was kind of like a local hero in a sense. I don't think he gives himself enough credit. He was known in the Atlanta area. He had been a musician, as he said, you know, toughing it out in the clubs. And of course, South Gang was from Atlanta, and the Floyds did a lot of touring in the Southeast. But, you know, being able to walk into 99X and have that opportunity. You know, I lived in Atlanta in the late 90s, early 2000s for about two and a half years. And it was just a huge influential stage. What 99X was playing, other stations would look at their playlist and play it. And they also were the sponsor of Music Midtown, which was a huge festival in Atlanta. They would rope off Midtown Atlanta with a ton of stages. It'd be a weekend festival. And that's where I saw Marvelous 3 for the first time. And Butch came out. We talked about in the episode, it was, you know, late May in Atlanta is pretty damn humid. It was probably 95 degrees out. And here comes this dude in eyeliner and in this red leather jacket, long sleeve jacket. And I was like, you know, that guy's got some balls coming out like that. I thought it was really cool. And he talked about, and we didn't get into it, but for the listeners, I'd like to let them know, he talked about losing that jacket in a fire. In November 2007, Butch and his family lost all of their possessions, including the masters to every song that he ever recorded. He was renting a home from Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers out in Malibu, and there was wildfires that swept through the area and took his home down. He lost all the master recordings to every song that he ever wrote as well. So it was a pretty devastating time, but I wanted to let the listeners know what we were referencing when we talked about that.
Yeah, that is awful, but I'm glad no one got hurt, but still, that's devastating.
Yeah.
That's irreplaceable type stuff, but yeah. Hey, another thing that you guys talked about on this episode, you mentioned a lot of bands, but The Knack came up a couple times, which is interesting because, little plug, I host another podcast called One Hit Thunder about One Hit Wonders, and we did an episode about My Sharona featuring Linus of Hollywood, who people might know from Nerf Herder and from Jirinus, which is a side project with Jarrett Reddick from Bowling for Soup. Anyway, I didn't know a lot about that band, but My Sharona was the biggest song of 1979, and that band was on the path, I guess. People thought they were going to be like the next Beatles or something, which I would have never guessed for My Sharona, which sounds kind of wacky to me in a way or something, but that band had such a look. They had that like button-up shirt, skinny tie look that so many bands emulated over the years. And you know, I thought it, even when you talk about the lyrics to Freak of the Week, which kind of deals with this, Chris, I think you and I are kind of in the same boat of being in bands for a long time that never really had a particular look. more were just all about the music. I could be wrong about that. I don't mean to say that about Les and Jake if it's not true.
No, we tried doing some different looks with photo shoots. They just always would come off forced. You know, some people have that X factor, some people don't. You know, a guy like Davey Havoc can put on the eyeliner and have the goth look and the vinyl pants and pull it off. But I wear that. I look like I'm going to a Halloween party.
We need to have a podcast look. We need to get podcast press photos. We got to have some sort of look. We'll figure that out.
As I'm in my tidy whitey scratching my balls. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
Thank God this is audio only.
Yeah. We are fully clothed. Don't worry, everybody. We are fully clothed. Hey, one more thing I wanted to touch on that you guys talked about, Chris, I thought this was so cool, was you talked about the concept of a beautiful mistake, which I thought was a really cool way to put that. But there's a guitar flub in this song. It's an imperfection in the song that is just so cool. Butch proclaimed, "I'd rather not fix it" about this. I know you said you could point out the exact moment in the song where this happens.
Yeah, listeners, check it out. It's the "Tell Me I Sold Out" breakdown part, the bridge at 1:46. There's a flubbed guitar note that they left in there. We call that a beautiful mistake, and it's those real elements that make a song sound human and not robotic. I think it was great that they left it in there.
My favorite example of this, I'm a huge fan of this band, but in the 90s, 10,000 Maniacs released an unplugged album, and they did a cover of Because the Night, and like in the bridge section, I think it is, Natalie Merchant is singing Take Me Now. On the second Take Me Now, her voice cracks. And it is this moment that I honestly believe makes the song. It is so memorable. It could be considered a mistake. Her voice cracks, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful mistake. And pretty cool, man. Pretty cool that Butch was down with that. Because it's, especially nowadays with Pro Tools and Logic and everything else, it's pretty easy to make your song sound absolutely perfect in every way. But I think we've learned on a lot of episodes now that's not always the best way to do it.
No, those imperfect imperfections are meant to be sometimes for a reason.
Wow. What a story you had of your songwriting, or I guess I should say non-songwriting experience with Butch Walker.
Yeah, I was stoked to write a song with him. I had followed his career. Like I said, I looked up to him, constantly reinventing himself, being able to pivot in this crazy industry and find a path for himself and be successful. And getting to write with him was so cool. And just to have him have that humility and just be so humble of like, I don't know, man, well, what do you want me to do with this song? And I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I want you to make it better, you know? And he was basically telling me that the song is what it is. He referenced the Green Day project he last worked on. And I'll never forget that. I thought that was really telling of the kind of person that Butch is.
That's character, man.
And speaking of character, Chris, each and every listener of this podcast shows their true character each month by giving towards our fundraiser, which this month, that's the National Brain Tumor Society. And your donations will go to research and treatment towards a cure for brain cancer. This is a horrible, incurable disease at the moment, and any help would be appreciated. Please head over to ChrisToMakesADifference.com and give whatever you can.
Yeah, man, this is a really great cause this month. I'm sure that most people out there have been touched one way or another, whether it's a friend or a family member, by cancer. So we all know that this is a great cause. So if you have a few extra bucks, head over to ChrisToMakesADifference.com and give what you can give, like you guys always do.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. Cancer is just, it's just so prevalent. And this is, this is our second or third cancer fundraiser now that we've done, Chris, because it affects everybody. So again, please, if you could head over to ChrisToMakesADifference.com and help us out, that'd be greatly appreciated. If you haven't already, give me a follow over on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. I'd appreciate the follows. I'm still trying to surpass my bass player, Roger Lima, and Less Than Jake. It's a friendly rivalry. He's about 6,000 fans ahead of me. I don't know. My ego's bruised, Chris. It's like, I think he's just better looking. I don't know.
He has the dreads. I think it's the
do I need a dread wig? Dreads.
Yeah, I think you need dreads and you'll pass him up.
I'm not keeping tabs or anything. He's only 6,543 ahead of me. But
oh man.
And if you haven't already, please check out our Facebook group. It's a lot of fun. The Chris to Makes a Podcast Facebook group. We I think we're over 3,000 members now, Chris, and growing. It's a wonderful community. It's free to join. And I'd like to give a shout out to a couple of people in the group, Mr. Mark Leibowitz and Mr. Bobby Poole. Thank you for being members and thank you for supporting Chris to Makes a Podcast. Chris and I appreciate it.
I'm in that group every day. I love having conversations with people. I don't care what it is. I'll post my hot take on my favorite Lagwagon album or whatever it is I want to talk about. I know that I'll spark a good conversation in there because I got a lot of people with a lot of opinions, but it's always in good fun, man. So, you know, if you have Facebook, join the Chris to Makes a Podcast Facebook group because I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, that's the most fun place to be. Website.
And the interaction in there is incredible. And I honestly thank each and every one of you that are members of the group. It is a lot of fun. And speaking of a lot of fun, Chris, I have a brand new single out that we're going to play the song as we wrap up the show today. The song's called Father Time. It's from the latest 7-inch released in conjunction with my book, Blast from the Past.
Yeah, came out on Smart Punk Records. And yeah, it's in support of the book. If you haven't picked up the book yet, you're insane. You're absolutely insane if you did not get a copy of Blast from the Past yet. And you could get yours at ChrisToMakesABook.com. Yes, we have every Chris DeMakes website that you could possibly have.
We cornered the market on those domains.
Dude, I bought them all already. I bought ones I didn't even tell you about. I got ChrisToMakesAHouse.com, ChrisToMakesAChicken.com, just whatever. You know, ChrisToMakesADinner. It doesn't matter.
Chris
we got them all.
Llama. You got everything.
Yeah. We got ChrisToMakesABook.com, though. That's where you could pick up your own copy of the 7-inch that features the song we're going to play, what we're going to leave everyone with, Father Time today.
That's right. And before we play the track for you on the way out of this episode, I want to thank this week's guest, Butch Walker, for sitting in with us and talking about the marvelous 3-track Freak of the Week. What a great song. So until then, we'll see you next week. And here's Father Time.
The single greatest creation. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.